ready to roll. All right. Good morning. The second day of the of our Policy Commission meeting here in the beautiful community of Unalaska. We are being brought a webcast right now this morning, and until we move into the other room where we'll work on our guiding principles, lunch will be at noon. Unfortunately, or fortunately, however you look at it, a couple of our commissioners will be on the first jet, aircraft back to Anchorage today. So we'll want to try to get as much done this morning as we can. We're going to go over, for the scope of work for today's session, we'll go over the background document and have presentations from team leaders or their designee on the seven topics that we've been that our teams have been working on, and then of course our strategy session will be facilitated by Christine Montine, we'll talk a little about that setup later this morning. A little bit of housekeeping. This is a request from the governor's administration, Stephanie, is that when teams are having conversations with particular state agencies, they request the following protocol. What's been happening is individual team captains, individuals, would talk to the liaison, talk to their favorite state employee, and so it's what's created is a created sort of a fatigue, and so the administration requests that if you have you want to talk to a state agency on any particular matter, is those requests go through Stephanie Moreland, and we'd appreciate if you could work with Stephanie on that. Of course, we're going to go over our policy team updates. The co-chairs have decided that marine transportation will join the Homeland Security and Coast Guard policy team because of overlap. And so that marine transportation will be co-chaired by Representative Osterman, and Stephanie and Captain Gray will continue serving on their the fisheries and wildlife team, but they will also continue to work on marine transportation. I don't think there's any other housekeeping or anything. Okay. All right, I think that we're going to go ahead and get started with our review of the background document. We'd ask that the team captain or their designee briefly summarize their sections, and if there is questions from the full commission, then we could have some conversations about that. We'd like to do this section maybe an hour or so that we can get into our guiding principles strategy meetings. And so we've got a list of our team, and we're just go through them in no particular order, but if Beth, if you're ready, we could have you give a report on science, research, and energy.
Sure. So do I push this? So I'm Beth Kurtula, House of Representatives, and our team was made up of myself and Representative Bryce Edgman as the co-captains, and Mayor Reggie Jewell, as well as Stephanie Moreland from the governor's office. And we also had a lot of help from Layla Hughes, and our staff did a phenomenal job, so I really want to mention them and thank them, Christine Hess, Tim Clark, Hannah McCarty. And just a very brief overview, I want to start with also thanking the 40-some commenters that we sought advice from. We sent out our very beginning draft and asked for comments and help from them, and many of whom are in this room. Commissioner Hardig gave incredible comments, thoughtful. AEA, the Alaska Energy Authority, similarly, Sarah Fisher Goh, just really helped us a lot. So it was with their help that we put together the few pages you have. You feel free to talk to any of us, and we welcome any comments, but it just in a very short way of doing it, in terms of the science and research and the energy, really a lot of what we did is list who's doing the broad picture. So you'll see lists of the groups who are doing that. But our center on the science and research was to note somewhat similarly to what Dr. Kelly did yesterday, which is to say that climate change is bringing around profound transformation in the Arctic at the same time as we're having demand for our resources. So in some ways what we're noting is some of the issues, the people who are doing the work on the ground, and then also in science and research, outlining a bit of the Arctic Council's work and noting the permanent participants, as did the representative from the Aleut International Group yesterday. We also note that we've got to have effective use of traditional knowledge, a very key point to us, and that Alaska has to be involved in the picture. That was really the brief outline of the research section. On energy, what we kept hearing as a theme was that the problem is really across the state in all of our rural areas, not just the Arctic. So it's a very broad problem, as we all know. Three really big issues for us are distance, diesel, and the fact that we're so unique in every community. Every community has a separate issue and a separate way of dealing with things, and that kept coming up as a theme. And the problem being that the cost of energy is rendering us non-competitive, and it's that age-old problem of Alaska turning out a lot of raw resource versus refined value added, and that's remaining a huge issue for all of Alaska. We talked a little bit about the programs that are available from PCE to LIHEAP, and then, of course, the great success of our weatherization program in individual homes, not so much yet in the commercial, and noted that problem. Again, we did a list of some of the groups that are doing the cutting-edge work. I'm just going to call out the Cold Climate Housing Research Center as an example of Alaskans, affecting the world. We feel that community sustainability and opportunity are going to really depend on how we lower our energy costs in rural Alaska and the Arctic. So that's the very brief overview. I want to ask my co-chair, Bryce Edgman, if he'd like to say a few words, and then ask Stephanie Moreland if she'd like to add. No, Bryce? Stephanie, could you add anything to that or note anything you think is important I missed, please?
Thank you, Representative Kurtula. This is Stephanie Moreland in the Office of the Governor. I just wanted to speak a little bit to process, and this reflects just the background information and input that we received from people. There was a lot more provided that would be more in line with considerations and recommendations for moving forward. When the original draft that this commission saw last was sent out for input, the request was for input on what didn't have enough emphasis, what had too much emphasis, and what was totally missing. Particularly with research, we received a lot on recommendations that you would see in future iterations.
Thank you. And that's it.
So, guys, could you pump up the volume a little bit for everybody, because it's pretty hard to hear with construction outside. So, all right, is there any, from other commissioners, is there any comments or questions to Beth and Bryce and Stephanie on their work? Yes, Lisa.
Thank you. Yeah, there's a really good extensive list here of a lot of the things, and I just want to kind of point out that, and I think I may have provided comments to your group, that industry's been doing quite a bit of research, and I don't really see them listed on here, so I just want to highlight it, see both baseline monitoring, ongoing monitoring, We do also fund a lot of the other research that's done by the university and by other groups. Thanks.
Thank you. We'll make that correction. And, yes, thank you. And that was we noted that you helped us. Thank you very much.
Okay. Oh, yes. Liz, go ahead, please.
Thank you, Representative Curtula and Representative Edgemond. I really enjoyed reading this section of the document. As you know, this is a really important priority for rural Alaska and Northwest Alaska. Nana's been doing a lot of work on energy projects in partnership with the Northwest Arctic Borough. And I know that as a commission, we've been working on these documents, and we've been very focused on language. I love visuals, and I'm hoping that you all can include a map of the successful projects that have happened throughout the state. For any of the energy projects that you have listed here. I think there's a great story to tell, but it will also help show areas where there are gaps. So I just encourage that. I think AEA has a map like that. So just a suggestion for inclusion in the final draft.
Okay. Thank you. Yes, Lawson.
Yeah, just to follow up, it was noted that in the other draft there were specific, I wouldn't call them recommendations, but highlighted subjects like coal regions engineering and a whole litany of certain topics that we have unique in Alaska that need attention for research. And so those are not in there now, but I suspect maybe they come in, the not necessarily recommendations, but highlighted areas of research that are unique to our state and like permafrost that need to be mentioned in some specific way, I think.
Thank you for that. You know, we kind of shifted into background, and we truly tried to stay with that, and that was a difficulty to try to figure out where that line was. But I feel like with today's work, we'll be able to shift more into what the commission wants next. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else before we move on to the next team? Okay. Senator Hoffman, you're ready to roll?
Yeah. My team worked on the fisheries report and...
You got your mic there?
Yeah. The members of our working group were Senator Gary Stevens, Representative Mark Newman, Stephanie Madsen, Peter Gray, Steve Scousel, James Robertson, and Lawson Brigham. And everyone has the draft and the three appendices. There's Alaska is so dependent upon fisheries. I think it was quite evident when Frank Kelty gave the report. I think he had a pretty encompassing report, but his was concentrating primarily on the fisheries down here and in the Aleutians, but it is a multi-million-dollar industry. But going to the report, a brief thumbnail synopsis is that the resource is a major source of food for many Alaskans. It is a provider for employment and is a great economic stimulus for the state of Alaska. The region, Alaska, is divided into two regions, the north, the waters in the north of the Bering Sea and the Arctic Ocean, including Chukchi and Beaufort Seas and Kotzebue Sound, and the rest south of that is the Bering Straits and the Aleutian Island chain. So those were the areas. Everyone could read it, but I just wanted to hit a couple of the highlights. There are several concerns. One of the concerns in the fishery that has been ongoing and really hasn't been resolved is the incidental harvest of species unintentionally caught in fishing groups known as bycatch. I think the there is language here, but I think that Bryce Edgman and Stephanie Madsen are going to be fine-tuning that, and not to make it controversial, but sort of to acknowledge that there is a problem and somehow that needs to be addressed. So both of them are working on that issue. The other, with the possible opening of the Northwest Passage at the North Sea Route to traffic vessels, there will be a need to designate transportation corridors, and I think this was mentioned by Frank Kelty, specifically in the Bering Sea. In doing so, they should take into consideration the fish and sea mammal resources to avoid negative effects. And I think that is something that is crucial. Another area is the need for an agreement in the EZZ zone or the Donut Hole in both areas of the Arctic waters. It is important to assure the responsible fisheries management in U.S. waters is not eroded by fishing efforts of unregulated waters in the Arctic. One other area that needs to be addressed is how and if the fishery in the northern waters, as the ice recedes, how is that developed? And it was felt by the group that the members, the people that are living along the coast, should have access to that fishery. We've started developing draft policies, and I'm not going to go into them today, but we'll be getting those out to all of the members for their review. But basically, we're doing the background, and there's a lot of wealth of information on fisheries in Alaska. So we have three appendices: the governance of Arctic fisheries is A, B is the state of Alaska Arctic management, and C is the federal Arctic management. So there's website after website after website that individuals can go in and get lost in Alaska's fisheries. So we provided those, we'll have a test on the Alaska fisheries at the end of the conference.
Okay. Any comments or questions?
And is there any, Peter or any of the other members want to say anything about the fisheries? Peter?
Thanks, Senator. I'll be brief. I think it was a good idea that we parked ourselves under the Homeland Security. A lot of what we do supports the language you see there in the red, but I characterize the work in the Marine Transportation Department as painting our considerations with a broad brushstroke in order to leave ourselves a lot of flexibility in our approach to some of these challenges and try to be proactive rather than reactive, I guess would be the best way to characterize it. If you'll notice on the blue writing, we have a marine transportation follow-up needed. I think one of the underlying objectives that this committee is doing is continuing to educate itself about all the working components of a marine transportation system, and not educate itself as we find out and learn about it, educate this committee and everybody else. Yesterday was a good working example of that. I'd highlight and note for everybody's consideration, find information about all the organizations with authority over marine vessels, and that's what we did when we heard from the pilots. And then the question then becomes, as we gather this information, how we're going to fold it back into the committee's recommendations and hearing, and what we're going to do. So in that vein, I think a lot of you may remember the earlier federal report about the Committee for Marine Transportation System, and it identified 16 fundamental elements that compose a transportation system. I just would refer all of you to think and consider that because your input, at least I it's valuable to me when you make your comments and you ask questions, and I kind of roll it over and feed it back to the senator or some of my other committee members. Oh, one other mention in here, as I do think it's significant. This particular committee is, I think, challenged even more so to some degree than some of the others in that we are seeing an increase in marine transportation tenfold with the advent of the Northern Sea Route. Things are happening sooner rather than later, and that necessitates, I hate to say being reactive, but kind of anticipating what we can do now immediately. And the mention of the Bering Straits as being a choke point, I like to call it, it's the Achilles heel of the Arctic. And as such, focusing some of our resources and energy on it, I think is critical at this stage. That's all. Or, thanks.
Stephanie, do you have any comments?
Thank you, Senator. I think that I agree with the presentation. I think we have more work to do, obviously. I think we've learned a few things here this week, and that is the difference between the established fisheries in the Bering Sea and the emerging fisheries and the need in the Arctic. And I think those are going to require different approaches. And then the whole research question of how are we going to increase the pie versus dividing the pie differently for research and the maintain the maintenance of the current science needed to enable sustainable fisheries. So I think that was highlighted here, and we can go back and see if we can incorporate some of the comments we heard, as well as very strong interest here in Unalaska, ensuring that there's a small boat fleet opportunity, which I think will be critical for emerging fisheries in the Arctic as well.
And I'd just like to acknowledge my two staff that worked on the report for the committee, Sandy Bird and Pat Walker. And Pat is doing remarkably well given her incident.
So, Senator, that means that specifically Pat, she has a strong set of hands?
Absolutely.
All right, thank you. Stephanie?
Thank you. Thank you, Senator, for the presentation. And as you mentioned, the concerns that are noted here, and I see a placeholder to address some of those. And I just want to also mention that the state of Alaska provides input to federal fisheries management through the North Pacific Fishery Management Council and has really placed a high priority on the concerns that you mentioned, including minimizing bycatch and better assessing impacts of that, as well as improving monitoring and our understanding of what's happening in these fisheries. So I'd be happy to work with you and your team to provide an update of latest actions on those issues, as well as a little bit more information on the Arctic Fishery Management Plan and how that plan would work unless changed for incorporating science and stakeholders into any future fisheries management in the Arctic.
Thank you, Stephanie. We're looking forward to that.
Anyone else on this, on fisheries? Yes, Lawson.
I know in this whole document we point out gaps and missing elements. We might, in the subject of fisheries, mention that this is a pretty great success story, almost a world standard on how to manage very tightly fisheries. And even our closure of the Arctic is a, you know, preemptive step. And maybe we could have a, you know, kind of a sense of positiveness in this particular subject.
That's a good point, and it may be an opportunity to make comment, on the certification wars that we're going through right now in Alaska.
But also highlights state, federal cooperation. And a whole set of an industry, a whole set of stakeholders and actors. It is a good example of a complex subject, but handled maybe as well as we could.
Okay. All right. Oh no, sorry. You're so quiet.
So I just wanted to mention. I think it's interesting in fisheries that it's broken out into region in Alaska's Arctic. So there's a northern, a south, or a Bering Sea, and a kind of Arctic. And this came up in Frank Kelty's presentation yesterday. And I think it'll be important for the commission to think about how we've defined Alaska's Arctic, because in each of the groups, maybe that's further downscaled into different regions or areas. I noted in Commissioner Hartig's presentation yesterday, I think for oil spill response, that it's also broken out into different regions. So we'll have to talk about how those regions fit into our definition of Alaska's Arctic, what's different and unique about them within our Arctic, and then how do we take lessons from one and apply them to the other and manage that that system. And I think it'll be important, too, for energy, because energy is such a statewide issue that the more we can downscale it and be very specific when it comes to Alaska's Arctic and then by region, I think that's going to be something that, that all the groups are going to have to well, are struggling with and are going to have to work toward.
Yep. Yes, Jamie?
So I thank you for letting me comment in the ex officio capacity. I think that bears looking at across the range, whether it's local, state, federal, or international, because we also got that from Commissioner Hartig's presentation yesterday. And the discussion of the IMO that we had the phone call come in on what is defined as Arctic, whether we're going to use the Bering Strait, whether we're going to use a certain degree of latitude, the whole U.S. Arctic Research Commission legislation that set up north the YPK and the Aleutian Chain. You can't really discuss it unless you define it, and we've got to scope the area. So I think that's going to happen on a bunch of levels. Thank you.
Thanks. Yes, Lawson.
I mean, having been there at the beginning with Frank from Mikowski's staff, the whole idea of including the Aleutian Chain and North was to integrate fully America's fisheries resources and all the research related to that. So it was integral to that definition. And as we move along and looking at transport and protection, because it's a seasonally ice-covered sea and polar codes all apply to this area, or will, because it's subpolar but still ice-covered and cold, and so there were physical reasons also besides including fisheries and fisheries research. So if fisheries is a huge issue here, which it is in this policy discussion, it would be probably wise to be expansive and inclusive rather than narrowing a focus down in the Arctic. It's unique. Our definition is unique in the Arctic Council or the Arctic states, but it has a lot of logic to it. And some consistency in how the government applies this in the international scene is quite helpful and useful.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Okay, the next one will go on to governance and indigenous issues. We had a tag team of Rob Earle on governance and then follow up with Liz Moore on indigenous issues.
Thank you. Governance and Indigenous Issues Policy Team leaders would be Senator Hoffman and Senator Gary Stevens, who unfortunately could not be with us today. Also, Chris Noros, Layla Hughes, the aforementioned Liz Moore, and Senator Hoffman's staff, Sandy Bird and Pat Walker, were very helpful, as well as Mills and Senator Stevens' staff, Katrina Matheny. Well, we got a bit of a late start, but we did meet four times this month, and there's still some gaps in this document. Our section starts on page 19, but we think we're off to a decent start, and we'll give the commission an idea of where we're going at least. We didn't have time to send it out for comments at all yet, but we will do that. So at the bottom of page 19, you can see a governance definition that we borrowed from the Arctic Governance Project that we kind of like. This governance section is organized to have international governance first, followed by federal, state, and local governance at the end. The exception to that is that we put Northern Waters Task Force at the beginning. And you can see on the top of page 20 a summary of what the Northern Waters Task Force had to say about governance. On page 21, we get in a little blurb on U.S. non-ratification of the Laws Sea Treaty. And then we get into the federal section. After seeing Brennan Kelly's presentation yesterday, we have some more ideas and stuff to add here, so thank you for that. And then we get into, on page 22, a summary of arguably the four most important recent federal Arctic policy documents to come forward. So those are summarized. That takes us through page 26. And then, yeah, obviously we have a lot more work to do on the State of Alaska section, and we just kind of got a beginning of the local section at the end there. One thing I should say at the end here, you know, the organization here is mostly kind of a list of governing bodies, and the policy team thought it might make some more sense to insert some descriptions of governance actions and responsibilities organized by topic area. So, for example, oil and gas fisheries, how do governing bodies interrelate and cooperate or not within those different areas? Of course, the fisheries and resources sections of this document mention governance, so we would have to do some cross-referencing to avoid duplication there. And that was all I had.
Comments, questions? Yes, Stephanie.
Thank you. I have a question on for the commission on how to best handle State of Alaska input to the document. At one point, we talked about having a standalone or separate document on State of Alaska activities that would be an appendix to this. I think that was one concept that was discussed. Since that time, some policy teams have really gotten extensive input from state agencies that can provide expertise in the area of interest, and that seems to be working well. And so I would like a little bit of feedback over, if not today, over the next couple of weeks on how much to put State of Alaska activities here separately under governance versus incorporate them in by issue area and background sections. And a little bit of discussion now or input later would be helpful.
So, Stephanie, I mean, what seemed to you, what seems appropriate? I mean, would it be better to embed them in the area that we talk about, or should there be a separate section?
My preference would be to have some general information about State of Alaska governance, important statutes and role of state government in the Arctic in this section, but then really to have the appropriate agencies be providing input to the team leads by topic.
That makes sense. And so we basically there would be a general information and sort of an index. So if you went down and you're describing a particular department, then you would say that there is more information in, say, for example, fisheries, or more information in oil and gas. So that's how what you're thinking?
Yes, and I think that if the co-chairs accepted this approach, we could work with policy team captains and see how best to incorporate it into background. And then circle back to this section to pick up any overarching themes that would be appropriate to have separate.
Stephanie, I think that's a great idea. I think in the area of governance, a broad statement about the statutes and areas where we've affected, I like that idea, and then the more specifics contained within each subject, because I think it'll be too difficult to put all of that in governance. But another point I think is to be made for all the groups that was made yesterday by Commissioner Hartig that was so good, and then touched on by Senator Giesel, is the gap analysis concept. And I think that's something for all of us to consider in each of the areas, that we start with the foundation of what already exists in policy, in state law, either as a result of regulation or as a result of statute. And I do think that's important to point out, whether it's a result of a state reg or a state statute, those kinds of things. And then to be able to say, this is where we've been and here are places where we request modifications or improvements or add-ons. But that way you don't have so much duplication. I thought that was such a great point the commissioner made, that there's a tendency to think you're coming up with a really original idea. This happens all the time in the legislature, only in the House. but anyway, so thank you, Stephanie. And I know Beth had a comment.
Thank you. This might be a little bit on that same note, but broader. I think it would be really helpful for us to back up and have, you know, the flow chart that Jim provided in terms of how the participating, the permanent participants, you know, interacted with the Arctic Council was the first time I'd seen that visually. And I think it'd be a great help to us to have as much of an overview of the overlapping jurisdictions, and that then, I mean, federal, state, indigenous, and the main points that they govern, as well as that might lead us into some of the gaps and the policy decisions that we can make versus those that are clearly off of our table. I mean, we're all powerful, but still. So I just, anyway, it leads into the same thing. So thanks for starting to set that groundwork.
Nakush is taking notes.
Senator?
And along the same lines as Stephanie, I think that we need to work closely with the Alaska Federation of Natives, because there are sovereign tribes in the state of Alaska that have governances over their people. They have tribal courts and things. So that has to be intermingled with the state, because there are dual jurisdictions here. And I might note that many people don't realize this, but of the private lands in the state of Alaska, 90%, over 90% of the private lands in the state of Alaska are owned by Native corporations.
Yes, Lawson.
Yeah, just a quick note. I think a little bit more expression about our Constitution, state Constitution, might be useful. It's mentioned here, but I think we could extract some important phrases and about natural resources, et cetera, that could be highlighted that are unique again to Alaska.
Good idea. Anyone else? Nils.
I guess I'd like to see what good governance looks like. We've provided a list of different levels of governance, but we haven't really talked about what good governance looks like or bad governance looks like, or attributed any meaning necessarily to any of these levels. So I think some further, we've got a definition that I don't know if we all agree to, but you know, from that we should extrapolate what are good governance principles, and what do we want to see necessarily applied to Alaska's Arctic?
Psychoanalyst part two. Thanks. Very good. Anyone else? Liz, on governance?
Yeah, I just wanted to express my appreciation to the commissioners for comments. I think our group has been trying to wrap our arms around direction in this section, and we talked a bit about looking at overlapping jurisdictions, things like that, but also I think Chris did a good job of pointing out that other sections would probably be talking about jurisdiction and we should be reaching out. So I think we all kind of have a desire to reach out to each of the working groups to get more feedback on that, but also really talk about gaps. So I just wanted to express my appreciation. I think it helps us further refine our direction for this group.
Thanks. Okay, see no other. Liz, you're up for Indigenous. And use your big voice, please.
Okay, I will try to use my I'm awake voice. good morning, everyone. I just wanted to thank my teammates for work on this section. I think we, earlier this month, talked about scrapping a few things and starting over and trying to figure out how we tackle all these areas. So this section is, I want to say, a work in progress, just like the other groups. We have a ways to go. And what we did is we also refocused on it being a background document. The current status or current areas around the indigenous people of the Arctic, and I actually wanted to talk to the group about retitling it. I don't know if we want to call it Indigenous Issues or if we want to retitle it like it was in the letter that went out, Indigenous Perspectives, or something that better encapsulates this section. So really what we did is we did some background on the state, the status of Indigenous people in the Arctic, a really brief, doesn't go very far in depth. Wanted to talk about how many people live within the boundary line of the Arctic that is defined by the Research Act. And basically, one of the things that we went into in governance was the different layers of engagement in the international level and the national level of the, I call them Arctic Alaska Natives in here. We can rephrase that or settle on a better term. But in federal co-management, in the United Nations, a little bit on the Arctic Council, and I think we can expand quite a bit on the role of permanent participants in the Arctic Council. And we didn't get too far into it at the state level, and I think this is where getting into what AFN is doing or other local, statewide Alaska Native organizations are doing is going to be important, as well as reaching down to the local level in terms of governance with Indigenous issues. We struggled about whether or not this belonged in this section or in the governance section, but we went ahead and kept it here. Given that this document will be looked at as an educational piece, I think by multiple avenues, both the public and others, we wanted to include information on the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act, ANILCA, and we have more to add to those sections. There's a few typos in here that we're going to fix, such as the 1967 typo on the Russian treaty. but one of the sections that we also worked on that I really wanted to look at was the common concerns and common interests of Alaska Native people. I really want to stress, and the group did a good job of pointing out, that this list is not a final list. And the implementation of these issues will be different from region by region. These are just some common themes that we heard in the Indigenous Stakeholders Group that we've seen in other reports and other testimony that's been provided in other areas and the work that ICC does in the Inuit Arctic Policy, items like that. We're going to work on footnoting each of these sections and where we found a lot of these topic areas. I'd invite anyone else from my group to provide comments or thoughts on this section.
Nils?
I didn't even have my hand up yet. You called on me. I want to thank Liz for doing the lion's share of work on this section. But really, and more importantly, I want to stress how critical the eight Arctic nations view Indigenous peoples as a fundamental component of approaching the Arctic, of making decisions in the Arctic, of addressing Arctic issues. And I think this is most ably demonstrated in the Arctic Council, where you've got six permanent participants representing Indigenous organizations at the table with eight nations. But you can provide so many other examples of how important this is, including by looking at each of the eight Arctic nations, Arctic policies or Arctic strategies. So I just want to say that that there's a great deal of importance that others have attached to this area, and I think that for Alaska's Arctic, it would behoove us to really look at how other people have approached that and address it with the same level of importance, because I think that would be a responsible approach to this issue.
And to follow up on that, two points is, of course, it's clearly demonstrated yesterday by Jim, was that, there are four Alaskan groups that are permanent participants on the Arctic Council, and that the federal government has recognized that their consultation with Alaska Natives is one of their primary goals. And then the a third thing is that, you know, I'm sensitive because I live in a region of about the size of Oregon, 30,000 people, and in part I represent part of that, but it's 89% Alaska Native. And so I think that the document that we eventually produce has to illustrate all those components of what Alaska is and how important our indigenous history and our and the future of indigenous people are in this state. So, anyone else? Yes, Denise. Thanks.
I just had a question. Are we also looking at executive orders or anything that the state has done, like the Millennium Agreement, which we thought was really critical with Tony Knowles back in the 2000s?
I think the group would welcome any additional comments on things like that. I know that I included the executive order describing tribal consultation at the federal level, which also requires consultation with Alaska Native corporations.
Yeah, I think we should look at some of the executive orders that also came out of the
Can you and I get together and talk about that? Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Liz. Let's visit Kodiak. Representative Osterman, your group, please. Security, Coast Guard.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. First off, I want to thank the committee that worked on this. Chris Ladovic from Mount Alaska, Professor Brigham from the university, and especially the ex officio member, Jamie Robinson, and because really what we centered around was the Coast Guard and the Coast Guard, you know, and the liaison between Jamie and the Admiral was very good, and it really helped us along the way. And then also recognize my staff, Astrid Rose, for the amount of work she put in trying to consolidate every the discussions that we were having. So, with that, the broad spectrum of what we looked at is hard to define, and it's every time we turned around and started talking Coast Guard, we ended up talking something else because Coast Guard had their fingers in everything. And rightfully so, because it really is, whether you were talking about the IMO, whether you were talking about the Arctic Council, whether you were talking about any of the interagency coordination that needed to take place between Alaska or the foreign countries or anywhere along the way. We talked about polar code and we talked about coastal pilot. All of this stuff then turns around and you look at some of the other committees that had their fingers in the same pies and were trying to figure out what they wanted to do too. And so it became harder and harder for us to get to where we needed to get. We also got into this whole conversation because of the Coast Guard when, you know, how do you define the Arctic? And as Nels brought up, how do you define the Arctic and what is the responsibility of Alaska and the nation for, because when you're talking about the Bering Straits and all of the new shipping coming out of that, where was that going? It's going down through the Aleutians at some point in time to go someplace else. And then, so that complicates the Coast Guard's mission, whether it's truly the Arctic that they're after. And when you actually look at the number of ships that go on the Great Circle route that don't go anywhere near the Bering Straits, yet they have the same impact that those ships coming out of the Bering Straits are going to have. And so it became harder and harder for us to concentrate on just the Arctic and try to figure out where we were going. We also got into conversations that maybe NOAA needed to be involved in as far as, but then again, they were involved in things like charting, which the Transportation Committee needed to talk about charting so that they could figure out where the routes are going to be. And so we kept on crossing back and forth in our conversation. And I think that's one of the reasons that the chairman has decided to put the transportation and the Coast Guard and the fisheries all into one group and have that conversation. You know, the Coast Guard is the prime national security for the Arctic. No other way to look at it. Whether you're talking about Homeland Security, or you're talking immigration, or whether you're talking about the borders, that they are the ones that are there. They're the ones that have the agreements, the international agreements on search and rescue with the Russians. And they're the ones that are constantly dealing with the Canadian search and rescue groups. And so it's a constant back and forth. Environmental protection, again, it's Coast Guard's ultimate responsibility. When you look at the deep horizon in the Gulf of Mexico, you see who's leading all of that, and that's the Coast Guard's out there leading the cleanup of that. And so we anticipate that that's the same thing would happen here in Alaska, that you're going to have the Coast Guard's going to be there doing this stuff. Marine safety, whether it's search and rescue or there's law enforcement of going out and chasing down people who are illegally fishing. It's the Coast Guard that's there involved in the fishery side of it. And who do they have on board their vessels going out for enforcement of fisheries is NOAA and their enforcement group. So they're all tied together as we go through this whole process. We got a lot of discussion on ship monitoring and whose responsibility is that. The state of Alaska puts some money into the AIS, but the Coast Guard puts money into it, too, because they can see the value of being able to monitor these ships that are out there moving back and forth. You get to talking about what's the Coast Guard doing, and you're talking about the IMO or the International Marine Organization. All of a sudden, you see the Coast Guard's one of the leading agencies that are in there having conversations on the IMO and the Arctic Council as well. So one of the things we did get wrapped around the axle on, but totally agreement, I think, is that the Coast Guard's got old assets. You know, these old C-130s that are flying around are harder and harder to find parts for. Their icebreakers are sitting in dry dock for 2 or 3 years, and there's no icebreakers in the Arctic for the United States to use. So it gets harder. It gets harder and harder, but what we got really wrapped around the axle, I think, more than anything else was, this is the Alaska State Legislature Commission, and we're going to give a report back to the Alaska Legislature on what the Alaska's Arctic Council or policies are going to be. And every time we got into the conversation, and I've heard it again time and time again today, is that what we're talking about is we're talking about the federal government, we're talking about international organizations. We're so far behind the curve on so many things that we do in the Arctic that it's going to be hard for us to catch up and come back to the Alaska legislature with the Alaska policy when everything we're dealing with right now is international policy and federal policies that are out there, and trying to develop that concept of where we are as Alaskans and what we want to see and what we can actually do. I think we need to have more and more conversations that we brought up today, and Stephanie, you're absolutely correct. What of each one of the departments in the state of Alaska, what is their involvement as they go through this process? We heard DEC today. We have not heard from DNR, and DNR is going to be a big player in this whole ballgame. And maybe they'll come up under the oil and gas development, but I haven't heard it yet. So I think that, again, is where we have to refocus some of our discussions on Alaska and the state of Alaska and what the state of Alaska's policy is going to be that is currently being driven by other federal, international things that are going on. So we tried to come up with something, again, we were really centered on the Coast Guard and the need for the Coast Guard up here. We're very centered on how we can support the Coast Guard. Right now, the biggest support we can give the Coast Guard, because we haven't set a policy on the state of Alaska's involvement in the Arctic, is to support the Coast Guard and their funding and those kind of things, and make sure that they're able to do the job that they're doing and continue to do. And obviously, we got into the conversations of place of refuge, because what's going to happen up there at some point in time? How far? What assets does the Coast Guard need? in northern ports or northern infrastructure, and that was kind of outside of the scope of some of the conversations we're having because of the other committees that are out there. But I think as we need to spend more time as a group, as a commission, sitting across the table from each other and talking, mm-hmm. cross-talk about where each one of us are at and what we're doing. Thank you. I would invite Professor Lawson or Chris or Jamie to chime in on any of this stuff, please.
From a local level community, of course, you know, we've had a couple disasters and declaration, and we use our own state of Alaska homeland security a lot. And I was, you know, kind of wondering, are we going to incorporate what our homeland security does for, you know, for disaster preparedness? You know, we need community hazmat plans. We need training, ICS training, NIMS trainings to be able to respond to anything that happens on our coast within our own state of Alaska Department of Homeland Security. I just kind of want to throw that out as trying to get some guidance on what else we needed to do within that.
We had some conversation in reference to the Alaska National Guard, and we had some conversations in reference to the North Slope and the search and rescue coordination that they do up there. Again, the title really is on our subcommittee was the Coast Guard, so and the Coast Guard has not in the past worked that portion of search and rescue and those kind of things. So it is it needs to be brought in and have that conversation about all of them. And again, when you talk about state of Alaska assets, whether it's Department of Transportation or DNR or DEC or the Alaska National Guard, it's all something that I think we need to bring together to look at homeland security and such.
Lawson?
No, just to highlight what Representative Osterman said, I mean, we need to go back to the legislature and justify why we should have state experts traveling a lot at IMO and all the Arctic Council activities to bring our expertise to bear and influence U.S. Positions on all of these issues. So that costs a lot of money, a lot of engagement of time and energy, and so I think that's a specific thing. But if we want to have influence on all these for U.S. international policy, you have to be there and influencing physically right at the table.
Well, before I go to Chris Laddick, is that, you know, Alan, you illuminate the issue that why the commission came here is that, of course, 60 legislators representing 710,000 people, we have to decide what any policy that is influencing Alaska is to our benefit. And so that's the conversation that I've had with several people is at the end of all these reports that we deliver to the legislature, how is the legislature going to play a role in that? Are we going to solely depend on the executive branch to take care of that? Or are we going to be a partner with them? Because future legislators have to be aggressive participants in Arctic policy. So, I mean, I appreciate you basically saying the same thing that I just said, is that we have to take care of ourselves.
And that, thank you, Representative Osterman. That was the point I was going to make as well. As I look at this document we're creating for the White House is sort of organizing our thoughts. It's a milestone. The report to the legislature is a milestone, but as we go through this, what is it that the state of Alaska needs to focus on most? And hopefully we'll get into that in our strategic planning. Where are we going? How are we going to get there? What are the roles and responsibilities of the governor's office as well as the roles and responsibilities of us? And what are we going to, and I kind of see it as helping focus what needs to be done. And so with Pete Gray talking about the Bering Straits, as we talk about all these issues, you kind of see what rises to the top, and some of the things that are rising to the top are the Bering Straits and all the issues that are associated with cargo over the pole, as well as oil and gas, et cetera. So I think we're all feeling the same thing. This is a very daunting task, but we need to get focused on what the outcomes need to be.
Stephanie and then Nils. And Jamie.
The Army and Air National Guard have been mentioned, but I really think that it will be important to include the work that they're doing, because not only are they incredibly active and important in the Arctic for search and rescue response, but they actually offer a really interesting model and something that the state has expertise in terms of building unique collaborations. They have strong partnership with their counterparts in Canada. They have strong partnerships with the federal government. They're able to, they've found ways to really maximize use of all available tools to be able to get into remote regions. They've done innovative work with local governments and with appropriate experts familiar with Arctic conditions to be able to build packages, to be able to drop for rescues. So they just have done some really creative thinking that crosses state, federal, and international cooperation to really leverage everybody's resources, and it might help this group find other similar ways where the state could take the lead in suggesting how to build innovative solutions in the Arctic with limited capacity.
No?
So what if we took Coast Guard out of this title? And it seems like if what our intent, I mean, if what I just heard from the group was that we are producing an Alaska document, it doesn't seem like the Coast Guard needs a second Arctic strategy. And that we should focus, and we've done a lot of good work on evaluating Coast Guard operations here and the support that they need, and that should be communicated somehow, and we should identify Coast Guard as the premier forum for addressing a lot of these issues. But we don't necessarily need another document doing that. I think the starting point for Homeland Security and Marine Transportation is the Division of Homeland Security, and getting John Madden and others involved in really setting out the scope for this is important. I also, so it should be a state-driven process, and maybe we could co-finance the Coast Guard up here or appropriate the Coast Guard up here and make it a state agency. But I don't think that's going to happen. So I think it's a lot of the challenge is in the title, because you did the work that the title assigned you. But the sense of the group is that we should be talking about Alaska. So I think we're going to have to maybe fix that. I also, Denise brings up a good point about local government, boroughs. I note the search and rescue aspect. The Coast Guard is the primary agency responsible, but the North Slope Borough provides that service for most of Alaska's Arctic.
We call the RCC, and then
RCC,
the 800
yep.
number for the Coast Guard. That's why I think there's a difference between
right.
areas.
So above the Brooks Range. So, I mean, I think that needs to be expanded quite a bit. We really have to look at local resources here in Alaska, in the Aleutians, in Nome, in Kotzebue, and in other places. And I guess just maybe a third point, I haven't been keeping track. Who's in charge of oil spill response? Kathy is. No.
May I comment?
Yeah,
sure.
Please.
This is a question our group has been wrestling with the past few weeks, and so I actually talked with Representative Osterman about whether his team was doing it. We talk about that a lot in our report, but we don't know who's handling it. We would be happy to take up that baton, and we make that offer.
Great. I think, I mean, there's no greater message that we could send for economic development than to address the oil spill response questions. So I just want to make sure that's identified somewhere.
Chris,
what was your question? Who's responsible for oil spill response?
Which group is?
Oh, got it.
Which team? Because it's not in necessarily any of the reports so far.
Jamie?
Again, thank you. With no vested interest in the name. I can certainly ascribe to pulling the Coast Guard out. It sort of set us up with me in a new position to really look hard at that. As I sit here in on Alaska Dutch Harbor and look around, I think the other piece that you could bring in, and it's alluded to loosely with the Army National Guard, the Air Force Guard, is the presence of big DOD. I don't know that that's touched on too much, but if you look at the cycles of federal involvement, oftentimes the big gorilla in the room has been the Department of Defense. It certainly affected Alaska with statehood, as we're sitting here in a place that was under enemy attack at one time. And I think that what I saw with the week of the Arctic, what Nils was doing, the lash up between ALCOM, JTF Alaska, the university, this is a whole other realm, because I think that there's some interest in the Arctic. It is the biggest game in town in D.C., if you will, in some regards, in Washington, D.C., and I think that there's a sense of maybe some of the things that are happening in the Arctic can help solve issues in other theaters of the world. So one of the things that I would respectfully suggest to the commission is to look at where the Department of Defense brings value at it. There was a lot of nice compliments to the Coast Guard, but if we look at NOAA and the Department of Interior's involvement in marine activities, so for instance, the whole charting issue that was brought up yesterday in some of the presentations, defense support for civilian authorities, which I think speaks to Mayor Michael's concerns in Nome and how we would respond in homeland security kind of issues. The whole idea of Alaska Shield next year, representing the 50th anniversary of the earthquake, and what JTF Alaska and ALCOM are doing to prepare for that. I think, again, I don't know where Representative Kurtula is, but I had an alibi on technology and research. There is a tremendous amount of DARPA work, a lot of Navy, Air Force, Army, if you will, research that the state could tap, that can partner up with private sector work that's being done and university work. So no commitment to keeping Coast Guard as a title of a section. I think Admiral Ostebo, as the maritime component commander, is very conscious of trying to take the lead in helping scope or work efficient lines of efforts for bigger Department of Defense. That's where we lash up at a Department of Homeland Security, Department of Defense level. That specifically happens with the 4-star in Colorado, which is what we call North America Command, or NORAD. And again, those associations with the Canadians, Homeland Security, Homeland Defense, are all very, very important to consider. And to the degree that there's interest, we certainly can get those, we refer to it as belly buttons, those points of contact, to expand some of that role. Anyway, thank you for, again, taking my comments.
Okay. Yeah, Senator Hoffman.
And I like the comments that Nils had made, making this sort of focused on Alaska. And just yesterday we had the presentation by the Alaska Marine pilots that they're charged with the protecting of life, property, and the environment. They are responsible for all of the Arctic. So I think that they need due mention in our policy statement as well.
Yes, Lawson.
Yeah, just to follow up with Neil's issue on the oil spill, who's in charge or whatever, we can't get away from the principle that it is the user and the polluter who's responsible for the first cleanup and for the initial response. And so, but that's why we have Alaska Clean Seas representing commercial industry to respond to the spill. Sure, the Coast Guard and the state agencies will give oversight and coordination, but the principle in our country is that the spiller and the polluter is the responsible for it, so we don't want to move from that. The other area, as Jamie mentioned, is how do we cover the national defense issues? I mean, we are the world's premier Arctic defense organization, nuclear submarines, missiles in the ground here, and nobody else has missiles in the ground, a missile defense force in the Arctic states. None of the other Arctic states, except for Russia occasionally, nuclear submarine force. We have premier air power and ground power and people trained in cold regions fighting from the state. So, I mean, we have an immense capacity, and we aren't talking about it at all in this document yet, and maybe we need to. It's a positive. It's not a negative. It gives us really tremendous projection over the Arctic, not only the United States Arctic and Maritime Arctic out, but over the entire circumpolar world. You know, whether we want to talk about it or not, we actually have that capability. It's a big plus. We want to maintain it, enhance it. I think the state needs to support that kind of thing. But again, it's supporting federal budgets and capacity. Might not have icebreakers, but we have other assets that are directly related to national defense. We haven't covered that. We didn't talk about it much in our discussion because we focused on more of the homeland security issues.
Yes, Jamie.
So with that, I'm getting asked a lot as the new Arctic policy person for the Coast Guard is ways to make positive inroads with those communities. And my thumping point tends to be defense support for civilian authorities. If you can bring things to the table that support the whole of the population, so charting, better weather, one of the other, again, technical pieces is satellite capabilities and communications. I think Representative Caratula was speaking specifically about refined or value-added. We talk all the time about indigenous and cultural aspects, but if you want to stay on your land and you want to continue to provide for yourself and your family in those places, all of the skills, the buildup of human resources, and that's done through information exchanges. So whether it's satellite or the unmanned aerial vehicles that can do data capture and communications. These are tremendous capabilities that can be taken out of. I mean, just think about the World Wide Web. It was really a Department of Defense initiative, and look at what that has done for the explosion in communications and education. And it's those kinds of themes that I think could come in and help all of Alaskans. And then if there are, if you will, black ops or other mission areas that need some leverage, that those can then be discussed as appropriately. But in the meantime, there's really a lot of wonderful stuff that can benefit the whole of the community coming out of the Pentagon, as it were.
Okay, I think we got concluding thoughts there.
Just quickly, so the oil spill response question. Thank you, Senator Geisel, for offering to take that up under your team. I also, we heard yesterday during the presentation that the greater risk is actually from shipping and marine transportation. And so I think we want to be careful in associating oil spill response solely with oil, gas, and mining development. And maybe that could be also under marine transportation for at least the shipping aspect. And those two teams can coordinate.
Yeah, the point well taken is that it straddles so many. And so it should probably be, Alan, it should probably be taken up there as well.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that now that you've combined the Homeland Security and the Transportation Fisheries together as one committee, I think we can pull that group together along with maybe the co-chairs and actually redefine the total scope of that subcommittee.
Yeah, and the other thing that's come out of this is DOD. We're forgetting about how big the military is in our state. I mean, sure, the Coast Guard is the one that's so obvious, but I think that because of the time, we're going to move on to, we have, Captain Gray, were you going to expand on your marine transportation?
No, unless somebody has more questions for me. Just, I think the general statement is a broad brush stroke. It's a work that's still in progress with identifying all the components And as we do that and bring it to, as I mentioned earlier, as the different components are brought and articulated before this committee, and we just, well, what are we going to do with that information? How are we going to absorb it and move it on along to market, if you will? So unless anybody has any specific questions for me about marine transportation.
Well, I think that the comment that I'll make is that, you know, obviously we're all aware of it, and this is private sector driven, is the Northern Sea Route and Prince Rupert probably are going to double the amount of ships or even triple the amount of ships that are going to be plying our waters. And so marine transportation, mostly private sector, is going to have a huge effect on Alaska. And I just wanted to say that. So.
You know, one comment I would make, and I think it was to Larry yesterday, we were talking about shippers exercising best practices and being in compliance and cognizant of how they conduct their affairs in our backyards, even though they don't have to be in compliance until after the fact they have problems. The model out there that I suggested to look at is Tofino traffic. It's a voluntary system. It's pretty much 100% participation from shippers that don't have to use the system. And the question is, that I think the answer would produce some fruit, is why do they use Tofino traffic? And I think they accrue a number of benefits through reduced insurance rates and other things. So as we look to establish something maybe through the Marine Exchange and some other more formal entities to give some shape to the shipping, not only through the Bering Straits, but up into, or not the Unimak Pass, but the Bering Straits, is what could be set up that could model after a similar type shipping deal like Tofino has. So I think this state could benefit by incorporating some of the things they have down there in terms of trying to get international shipping companies and vessel operators to come into compliance with some of the recommendations we might make on a voluntary basis. Over.
Okay. Thank you. We got two more to go, and then we're going to take a short break before we go into strategic planning. Nils, you're up.
Great. Thank you. So I have a PowerPoint, because I thought this was a PowerPoint deal. I want to thank Representative Newman, our team captain, for his leadership during this, our efforts, and also Rex Shattuck, legislative staff, who done a lot of work on this. Other members of the team, Jake Adams and Denise Michaels, have contributed greatly to this process. So we took some liberty, and I guess the reason that ours isn't in the rest of the packet is we came a little bit late to drafting this, but I think you can consider the report in front of you something of a treatise or our approach to planning and infrastructure in Alaska's Arctic. We took some liberty in the title because I don't think that planning is conducted in a vacuum, so it's really planning for something. And since planning and infrastructure was there, we're planning for a robust infrastructure system in Alaska's Arctic. Lieutenant Governor Mead Treadwell, when we were in Barrow, talked about four aspects of access, legal, capital, infrastructure, and knowledge. And so we used that to frame how we're approaching planning. And then when it came to infrastructure, really the purpose of infrastructure addresses resilience, safety, and cost. And so we viewed infrastructure as the focus area that we'll be working on and planning the method with which it is addressed. Our scope of work then is everything. Because, sorry, Denise, it's extra work probably for us. But I think that in our planning, we sketched out all the different aspects of infrastructure, from hard infrastructure to soft infrastructure, and came up with quite the list. You'll probably see up here the other working groups' themes. And so our plan in going forward is to connect with other team captains and to figure out how we can align our efforts with the other group efforts so that we're not duplicating. But maybe we can provide some added value in regard to the planning aspect. So the reason we're talking about infrastructure is that it facilitates economic development. It contributes to economic growth as well as people's quality of life. It reduces cost of production and all kinds of other issues. And Denise was quick to point out that really this is also about people and communities addressing health and safety. So it's all tied together. But this is why we're talking about infrastructure. Our approach in talking about infrastructure and planning is that we'll think of this in terms of a system that in Alaska's Arctic, which is diverse and but also has some commonalities, we do have to think of it in terms of a system or systems, and that we need to link those different aspects together for an Alaska Arctic approach. And our work in moving forward will be to consider this a fundamental aspect of Alaska's Arctic policy. Aspects of infrastructure, logistics, communication, energy, but also, as I mentioned before, security and access. In moving forward, we've started to evaluate each of the subgroups or sub-areas that we defined. So you can see here, you know, we've started talking about the port analysis that's been done, the coastal infrastructure that's in place, the unified plan that actually identifies and maps out a lot of ports, harbors, place of refuge, and anchorages. We talked about, and we will be talking more about nautical charting, mapping, that facilitates this area. And then also thinking, too, about, you know, how do we make ports, harbors, places of refuge, and anchorages meaningful? What does that mean for the people who live near them, for the mariners who rely on them, and demonstrate their importance in something of a tiered system? When it comes to telecommunications, aids to navigation, and data acquisition and sharing, we know that this is a challenge. We know that there are good groups working, doing good work on this, Alaska Marine Exchange, the Coast Guard, that there is private efforts. Industry has a huge role in data acquisition and sharing, and their partnerships with the North Slope Borough and in other areas need to be identified and then also leveraged for lessons learned. So that'll be some of the work that we're moving into in the month to come. Emergency management and response. I think you know, we brought up oil spill response and search and rescue during the last discussion, and I think the planning infrastructure group can assist in that. I think we're also interested in how that fits into the rest of infrastructure development. Response capacity, again, is our argument for economic development. Transportation and access to resources, really this is intermodal transportation that we're talking about. Some of it comes back to the Lieutenant Governor's talk of a nested ownership of land and resources. We know that this is tough, but that we want to do it right. So we'll be talking a little bit about intermodal transportation, how do we connect marine, aviation, road, rail, in something of a systems approach to transportation, and then how does that connect to and facilitate access to resources. Through an Arctic lens, this is especially important for coastal infrastructure and destinational shipping as we look at new resource, future resources. Energy extraction, production, and delivery. There is an energy group, so Representative Krutula will be connecting with you to, and Rep. Edgman will be connecting with you to talk a little bit more about what's Arctic about energy and how planning and infrastructure can support really reducing costs. I think affordability is so key. Human resources, this is the soft side of infrastructure, human resources, workforce development, research, education, and training. Again, a lot of planning needs to go into this. And we've got pretty robust infrastructure system in place to support these efforts. So highlighting the work of the state of Alaska, highlighting the university system, the Alaska Workforce Investment Board, the Alaska Process Industry Careers Consortium, AVTEC and their ice navigation program, I think that was brought up in another group too, but some really good efforts to build off of, and our plan is to identify those and talk more about how we can leverage what currently exists and what our goals are for soft infrastructure. Finally, this is about community health too, safety, security of our peoples. And, you know, I know that we should be starting with DCCED and other state agencies to think about what strategies might be included in Alaska's Arctic policy for the priorities that they've been working on. As we move forward from this, the Planning Infrastructure Group really will be thinking more about how we can connect with the other working groups, with State of Alaska agencies, but also taking into consideration national and international efforts, and then qualifying those various efforts. Thank you.
Bob, could I go back just for a second? You asked me about marine transportation and pipe in one more component. After reflecting for a little bit, I don't want to miss the opportunity, but Senator Hoffman made the recommendation that about including in some capacity about marine pilotage. And I just would like to punctuate that I do think marine pilotage, the institution of piloting, is a significant component of any marine transportation system. And to not make mention of it is an oversight. I believe pilots should be out of sight, but not out of mind. And unless it's memorialized or codified in some respect and put down with some words on either side of the word pilotage, it would be easy for those who would be inclined to leave it aside because it doesn't work for them economically. I will be the first to admit pilots can be a pain in the kazoo, but we can also be a great asset. And if I think our good mayor here of Dutch Harbor was here today, she would tell you that, that this organization that presented to you yesterday has been nothing but a great asset to this community, and I think it would be a great asset to the development of the Arctic. So I ask this commission to make sure that pilotage is codified into public policy. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're referring, of course, to the oil, gas, and mining, or minerals, research development team. We have a fantastic team. I am honored to serve with them. Lisa Pekich serves on the commission as a representative from the oil and gas industry. Stephen Trimble is a commissioner representing the minerals industry. And we have the Department of Interior, represented by Pat Pershaw. Now, Pat has a very complex work schedule, et cetera, so he, frankly, hasn't been able to attend much, but we have been honored to have his staff person, Michael Baffrey. Michael, raise your hand. Higher, higher. Who has provided valuable input. I also want to honor my staff, Margaret Dowling, who has served our committee, our team, and my staff, Lindsay Williams. You know, our team loves our subject matter, but we have been struggling with who our audience is. Is it the legislature? Is it the federal government? Now, of course, a skilled marksman can move from one target to the other with great accuracy, and that's what we endeavored to do in our report. We recognize that there are Alaskans that don't know some of the material in our report, and so this informs Alaskans, legislators specifically, but should this be adopted and authorized to go forward from the legislature to the federal government, we endeavored to be assertive to the federal government about the fact that Alaska does it right. We emphasized in this the impact on our economy from these particular resources, but also on how that economy impacts communities, people who live there. The culture of our indigenous people and the preservation of it through an economy that keeps communities alive, but also talking about the mitigation of the impact of resource development. We tried to stay in our lane, which is why we didn't go deeply into oil spill prevention and response, but we will now a bit more, sharing that with Representative Osterman's team. We started out by interviewing stakeholders. So we talked to the Native corporations, we talked to industry representative groups, associations, and were greatly informed by our visit to the North Slope Borough, to Barrow. In addition, I had the privilege of visiting the Northwest Arctic Burrow a couple weeks ago, learned a lot there, which also we incorporated into this report. So in terms of background, we emphasize that Alaska, in the second paragraph on that first page, has some of the most sophisticated interagency coordination and permitting processes in the country. With the expertise, experience, and commitment to safely develop Alaska's Arctic vast resources. In our discussions with the Department of Natural Resources, the deputy commissioner told us that the federal representatives came and talked with our state DNR and DEC, and our state government described how we track, particularly mineral development. And the federal representative said, whoa, this is a pretty neat system you guys have got going here. We need to do that. And it's a collaborative system, a weekly meeting among the different departments that are affected by resource development so that everyone knows where that project is in whatever department is reviewing that permit application so that when the permit gets to their department, they already know what's been done. There isn't a slowdown, a repetition. I'm very proud of that. And that also is something we are hopeful that Alaskans reading our report will raise their head a bit higher, feeling a bit prouder to be Alaskans because we are doing it right. You'll notice in our report we used extensive use of footnotes. We understand that brevity is the soul of wit, so we tried to remain somewhat brief, but there was a lot we wanted to put in footnotes, so that's why they're kind of extensive. We alluded a little bit to spill response. We'll beef that up a bit in that footnote there on page 2. You can see comments there from Mayor Brower and former Mayor Itta in the footnote on the bottom of page 2, again, bringing in that tension that exists with all Alaskans. We know that those resource development, oil, gas, and minerals, feeds our economy and keeps us all able to live here, and yet we want to preserve our environment. We also want to emphasize the health impact assessment that our departments are doing now, and that's brought out on page 3 on the last paragraph above the very long footnote there. The health impact assessment is now considered best practices. Our state is leading the way in incorporating that in the permitting process. This is held in the Department of Health and Social Services. A health impact assessment judges a project based on its potential effects on the health of a population and the distribution of those effects within the population. So it really looks at how this is going to affect a community. And I think that's an important thing to bring out. And you'll notice in the last sentence that our state received an award, a National Planning Award, for its exemplary outreach to rural communities. So, you know, we've been doing this for a long time, and I think it would be helpful for the federal government to realize that we're not a bunch of uneducated hillbillies up here. But anyway, not to disparage hillbillies. Roads to resources is there also. This is an issue of tension, of course. When we talk about infrastructure, for us, our team, oil, gas, and minerals, it means road access to those minerals. That road access opens up areas, allows communities to receive supplies and food, et cetera, fuel, at a less expensive cost, and yet it also opens up an area to access for hunting pressure, fishing pressure from outsiders. So that whole discussion has to take place with great care, and we acknowledge that there. And then I think that, you know, we end kind of looking to the future, our last sentence, to encourage new capital investment and secure the benefits of new resource development. We need to spearhead new strategies to keep us competitive with other Arctic nations. So that's our background. We tried to stay background. Our considerations will look to the forward. We do have that portion developed pretty extensively. Of course, that's not what you asked for today, so we didn't include that. We do recognize we have a gap in some of our information, and that is speaking with the Department of Fish and Game. Our resource development affects fisheries. And so we want to talk to the department about their evaluation of our report, what else we need to emphasize here in terms of protection of our fishing game. So, team members, anything to add? Stephen, Lisa, Michael? If not, that's our report. Thank you. Thanks, Nels. It was great to have you up to the region, Senator Giesel, and other representatives who were able to make it up, and senators. One of the things that I'd like to do is work with you on your language about roads to resources. One of the things that NANA has always stressed is that the work has to be done with the communities first before NANA can take a position. And so I'd like to work with you on that language and the footnote on page 7. I think I already have some alternative language for you. And also another, just a little bit on the Red Dog Mine, also there too. I'd like to work with you on that language. One of the things that I like to stress is to remind people that part of the reason that the cooperation works so well between us and our mine operator is because we own the land. And we have that privilege of making that agreement. So I'd like to talk to you a little bit about the history there, but appreciate this section and the importance that it has on our future and as well for future generations of Alaskans. I think that's always a discussion that we have in our region, is how are we going to manage these resources to benefit not only current generations but future generations to make sure that those resources are available going forward. Thanks.
So I think maybe just a comment about all the groups, but Senator Giesel, you, I think, highlighted it. There's so much great material that you've uncovered, that all the groups have uncovered, that when we think of audiences, most people don't know about, and not just most Americans, but most Alaskans don't know about. And it would be interesting to go back through each of our reports and identify, here are the three things Alaskans need to know about oil, gas, and mineral development, or planning and infrastructure, just so that we were able to communicate those priorities. I mean, I didn't know about the permitting process. Sometimes the state is its own best-kept secret. I mean, there's really great work going on within agencies, and we're not telling anybody about it. But that's maybe a function that this commission can offer. Same thing when it comes to oil spill response. We heard yesterday about we don't know what the planning, the exercises, the strategies are, and so we're afraid of what might come, but we can help communicate that, or even that the Aleutians are part of the Arctic. There's things that we can do to communicate. So I think maybe thinking through what are kind of the top three things that every Alaskan should know about our group might be helpful with the audience piece.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with Liz on the issues dealing with the roads to resources. But I think it's also more than that when we're talking about, you know, energy, when we're talking about the Arctic and what our policy is going to be, because it's a connectivity issue more than it is as much as it is a road to resources themselves. And so, you know, the west coast of the United States would never have been what it is today if it wasn't for connectivity of the railroad and et cetera. The Kenai Peninsula in the state of Alaska would not be what it is today without building a road down there. And so, you know, the connectivity that we need to continue to work on, you know, whether it's getting energy to the Arctic or whether it's taking resources out or whether it's actually taking care of the human resources we have up there as well. So it's really more than just a road to resources.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Oh, Stephanie, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator, I appreciate the reaching out that you did to DNR and DEC, and I know that Fish and Game has been on your list to consult with and talk with about your team's work and interests, and this is the kind of interaction that I had in mind in offering to coordinate state input and expertise at the team level. I think it was really a great exercise, and appreciate the time that your team took to learn about Office of Management, Project Management, and Permitting, those types of things, and being able to articulate them to Alaskans and to the federal government is important. We do have a lot of strengths to build from.
Yeah, and just to remind people of my earlier comment from the co-chairs is that per the request of the Parnell administration, the protocol to working with state agencies is through Stephanie. Okay, that was a good session. One item from yesterday is that the co-chairs will meet with Brendan next week, and we will draft the letter to the White House, and we'll, before it goes out, all commissioners will be able to look at it and possibly suggestions that would improve the letter in our communication based upon last night's really good conversation, a frank conversation with Brendan. So before I bring up our guiding principles facilitator for the rest of the day is that there is one requirement from the co-chairs going into this into the other room. There is five tables. Each table will have six people at that table. So basically there will be 30 people in this session led by Christian. Is that the requirement is say, for example, you have four or five team members here, maximum of one team member per table. In other words, if you have three team members, two of them can't sit together. So we're going to divide the teams up so that there really is a flow, a cross-pollinization of a lot of ideas. And so with that, I'd ask Christian to come forward to introduce himself and to outline our next session.
Good morning.
Restaurant. What's the name of that? The Sheldon Room? Okay. So, anyways, if we could meet over there in 15 minutes, that'd be great. Again, one team member per table. I may rearrange things a little bit once we get in there, so I just ask your willingness to work with me on that. We're going to try to move the process as quickly as we can because I know some people need to leave at various times and need to move around and do some of their own logistics, and so you'll feel that a little bit, so we'll try to get as much of the main work done early, and other than that, I'll explain the rest of it once we get in there and we're getting ready to go.
The group about business, I have one question, and that is, at what point will an overarching introduction section to the document start to shape up? We've heard a lot about themes that cross all the groups, and the reason that we're doing this is for the benefit of Alaskans and people, and some of that is lost when we get right into the policy areas. I think that will surface in an introductory section or statement.
That is chore number one for the new executive director.
Mm-hmm.